What's up, folks? Welcome to another episode of the Junior NBA Coaches Corner. Great discussion today about advanced scouting. We're joined by NBA G League head coach of the Long Island Nets, Brett Brielmeyer, from the Skill Factory in Atlanta, Daryl LeBerry, and the head women's basketball coach of the Marquette Golden Eagles, Megan Duff.
Welcome to the Junior NBA Coaches Corner. Here are your hosts, Dallin Cuff and Monica McNutt.
What's up? Good to have you here. Another episode of Junior NBA Coaches Corner alongside Monica McNutt. I'm Dallin Cuff. Today, Mom, we're discussing advanced scouting. Have you ever done any scouting yourself? I know we weren't in the coaching game, but you ever dabbled in seeing what's going on there?
Definitely not advanced scouting. Synergy, watching a couple of plays, you know, being able to pick it apart, tell you what happened, yes. But the numbers, no, that's not me.
I haven't done it in a formal sense. I try to build my own scouting reports for my games and whatnot. But I'm not reporting to a coach, so it's a little different experience. So let's bring in some people that actually know what's going on. Three great guests. The Golden Eagles have been soaring since she was brought on as a women's head basketball coach two seasons ago. She is off to the best two-year start of any Marquette women's basketball coach in school history. She has gone 43-15 overall, 27-9 in the Big East play, and took home the Big East Coach of the Year honors in her first campaign as a player. She was a four-year letter winner at Notre Dame. She won gold with Team USA and played in the WNBA with Minnesota and New York. Let's welcome in Megan Duffy. And he has been an assistant coach in the college ranks with Georgia Tech, Georgia State, and Campbell, as well as coaching in the G League. And now with Skill Factory in Atlanta, that's Daryl LeBerry. And he played his college ball at the University of Arizona, began coaching as an undergrad assistant under Hall of Famer Lute Olson. He has coached with the Spurs, Cavs, Nets, and is now the head coach of the Long Island Nets of the G League, Brett Brielmeyer. Thank you guys so much for joining us, Brett, Megan, Daryl. It's great to be with you here. We're talking advanced scouting, as you just heard. And before we get into some of the particulars about it and maybe presenting to the teams, different things like that, Brett, I want you just to start from a real base level, what your organization does as it relates to advanced scouting. What goes into it? What do you do?
You know, advanced scouting is really a multi-layer, huge, you know, resource of both time and individuals. And it kind of starts from the bottom, where some of our more junior people, our advanced scout, who's actually kind of out on the road with you know, the other teams watching them, and then eventually just builds all the way up to the top, and eventually gets to an assistant coach who's responsible for creating kind of a game plan and a blueprint of how we're going to play that night, and eventually that idea and concept is brought to the head coach. We review it as a group, and then ultimately presented to the team. And with their kind of input, feedback, we go out and play that night.
Megan, anything you would like to, anything specific to being in a college program right now that may be different as relates to a pro program?
Sure. Well, thanks for having me. Yeah, I just think advanced scouting is taking on a world of its own. And I think we're constantly, you know, for myself as a head coach down through the rest of our staff, are always tinkering with new ideas and new stats to look at. And I think the biggest thing that I can, you know, kind of summarize from our side here at Marquette is it has to match our team. It has to fit, which ultimately means you want to win the game at the end of the night or into the afternoon. And I think I know for me, we're always trying to find that balance of, you know, less is more sometimes. And then at the same time, as a coach, we all want as much information as we can to be successful. So, you know, like Brett mentioned before, there's a lot of layers to it, even depending on the time of year you're in is when you can really tackle certain things related to the advanced scouting.
And Daryl, just to tag on that, obviously most of your experience was in the college realm, then in terms of the LA Clippers working in the bubble with their G League team. You're always talking to coaches at different levels, but were there things you may have learned about advanced scouting or different perspectives as you look between the pro and the college game?
Well, the NBA and the G League have a totally different outlook than college does. I mean, the amount of different stats that they look at and the things that are tracked, not only by your organization, but different organizations that you subscribe to, and the information that you gather can almost be information overload for a guy like me, who is a little bit more nuts than bolts, to be honest. But from a organizational standpoint, I think you have to track some of those things. But from a coaching staff, I think you probably try to need to keep the game as simple as possible. I kind of agree with what Megan said, because if you give the guys too much information, it can just be overwhelming for them, and they won't be able to handle the simple tasks, and the simple tasks are what actually win the game.
I'm so glad that you guys said that, because I'll be honest, math was not my thing. When I hear advanced stats, I'm like, oh God, here we go, here we go. When at the bottom line, y'all, we play ball, go get a bucket, go stop the other team from getting a bucket. So in terms of parsing out the information in a way that it is applicable, digestible for your squad, what does that look like? And Megan, we can start with you.
Sure. I think it goes back to how you want to teach your team. And I think we try, as much as us coaches have a lot of information on paper, on video, ultimately in our heads on game day, how we present it to our team is very different. I know for us, if we have 2 days to prepare for an opponent, we're doing very short segments, you know, a 10, 15 minute segment with your maybe individual position coach. We might do another 15, 20 minutes with the entire team. And ultimately, when we're teaching our college kids, it's building up for that game day. You know, along with that too, every player is going to be different. So there, maybe Monica, that was you. We're like, your job is to get buckets. She goes left, you know, run her off the 3-point line, and that's all you need to know. And then you might have, you know, somebody else on your squad that you can really dive into a few different things, and they want to know the why of it all. Like anything else, I think advanced scouting is also the numbers and then the feel of coaching, right? So what each one of your players needs and what information specific to your young men or women that, you know, back it up and that will help them be successful.
Brett, I think of the three coaches, your reaction was the most into the numbers. No, fair foul, maybe not.
I think it was the foundation building of getting into this discussion, but okay. I think that's a fair assessment. Yeah.
So what is that? I mean, obviously it is, coaching is about the relationship with your team, but in what ways have you found advanced stats to be most useful?
To me, the biggest piece of how you use them is really, what does your foundation look like? What do you guys believe in as an organization, as a coaching staff? And there's kind of two ways you can really go it. There's the coaching, you know, philosophy of like, this is the way we play every night, regardless of our opponent. And then you got the other side where it's like, we're going to scheme heavily, you know, night in and night out to, you know, based on who we're playing. So both of them kind of have their pros and cons, but the more veteran teams, the teams that I think that have been together longer, have an ability to absorb more of that advanced information. But really at the end of the day, the beauty of basketball is the fluidity of it, the poetry in motion. And at the advanced numbers aren't really important when you got someone driving at you off a closeout. So I think it's good to prepare them to give them a sense of what we're going to see, what we're going to try to take away and manipulate. Again, a lot of it is just the foundation of what you believe in as a coach in an organization.
I love both of those answers. Okay, Daryl, advanced scout horror story or advanced scout success story? What you got for me?
More horror stories, to be honest, than success stories. Okay. So, you know, myself and the head coach of our team, who was Paul Hewitt, were more college-oriented guys. So the rest of the staff was more NBA-oriented guys. So, I mean, everything, that their whole way of thinking about basketball is based on analytics and based on advanced scouting. It's just how they think. And I think it's kind of the world of the NBA. So we would have a lot of, I don't want to say heated, but we would have a lot of good discussions on why we feel one way versus why they feel another way. And then at the end of the day, it kind of came down to something you said, Brett, when somebody's driving at you on a closeout, the advanced stats can't help you. Like, you have to have an idea and a game plan on what you're best at and what is best for the team, what we're doing schematically to try to stop them on that closeout. And it's just kind of I think it's necessary because especially if you have lesser talent, when you have better talent, I think you should just play kind of what Brett said, you should play your style and impose your will on the other team. But if you have lesser talent, you need to know what the other team is trying to do and why they're trying to do it so that you can use your guys or you can use a scheme to kind of, you know, impede their progress on what they're trying to do to help you win the game. But if you have the better talent and your guys are more veteran-laden, like you said, I think you should just play your style, get better at what you do every single day, and eventually you end up winning the game.
I think it's interesting how, I mean, I'm a big numbers guy too, but there's a balance to all these things and trying to figure out how this stuff all works and how to assess the game. And you can't have information overload. You can spend too much time working on the other team. I have flashbacks to college where our coach is being, I'm tired of talking about them. Let's talk about us. Like just had enough talking about the other team. So Megan, your perspective as a head coach, and the guys, I want you to give your perspective as assistants on the staff. So we'll start with you, Megan. How do you manage that in terms of how much time you're going to invest talking about and focused on the scouting of another team versus things you want to work on with your squad and kind of managing your assistants as far as what we need to do as a practice plan? How do you manage that balance?
I think the biggest thing for us, we try to just be consistent throughout the season. So if we say we have a 2-hour practice, it's very cyclical with what we're doing. So we're working on, the offensive side of the ball for us. We're working on the defensive side of the ball. And in that side of the ball, you're working on key concepts that the other team is going to be doing. Interesting in the Big East for us, we have a lot of teams that, run, some motion continuity and you can't necessarily script everything they're going to do. So even with our scouting, you have the numbers that back it up, but we're playing a lot of 2-on-2 and 3-on-3 and giving them as much as, like, for example, here's one. If I say, this team in our league, if they make, 10 to 12 threes a game, they win 80% of the time. So even when we're doing 2-on-2, 3-on-3 games from a scouting, your emphasis with your voice and how you're teaching and your closeouts and, preventing certain players from doing that is how we emphasize that analytical stat. So mm-hmm. It's still the teaching and the motivating, the coaching with it. And they will understand and absorb that more than when they shoot it here, when they're on the wing, when this person makes this many at halftime, like they don't care about that stuff. So we try and incorporate it that way with our practices and be very balanced and consistent with it. And along with that, stopping at the right times to emphasize those stats and what's important that we think to win the game. And then I think the third part outside of when you're building your offense and your defense is just then how you put your film study in it. And I mentioned that before of, how that film matches up with what you're incorporating into practice. And that's the teaching, that's the stat. And then I think, our young women are very visual now. So that you take what they did in practice and then you're showing, okay, here's exactly, that 3-on-3 movement pattern that you're going to see a lot. And what helps us then moving forward to game night is when you're in a timeout on the board and you got to make a quick adjustment, you're bringing up those same exact things that you worked on for 2 or 3 days in practice and had those key little triggers and verbiage and words that might be a stat, might be, hey, that's the biggest key to this game to win, and it doesn't overwhelm them. So it's just that cyclical package of, the practice work, the film work, and then how you emphasize it in the game.
By default, guys, it feels like the advanced stats conversation went to how you feed it to your team so that they can defend the other team. But Daryl, does the idea of advanced stats offensively make you feel any little better? Because, if your guy's going to the rim, the other team has to deal with them just as well. Like when Coach Duffy said they shoot 12 threes, I was like, okay, so if we shoot 14, we'll win.
Well, it depends on how you see the game. So I see the game defensively for the most part because regardless to what the new era of basketball is, I think that if you're going to win at a high level and you're going to win at a championship level, you got to defend. So I'm always thinking about what I can do to stop the opponent. But from your standpoint, obviously, you want to use your stats to tell your team what we're doing best. So you don't want guys shooting a bunch of three-point shots or our team shooting a large number of three-point shots if we don't shoot the ball well, or vice versa. If we have no interior scoring, then we want to make sure that we're finding ways to get our better perimeter players in space and do different things. So you want to feed them that information. But at the end of the day, coaching is all, how you articulate your message. And then, I know people laugh at this, but it's how you can trick your guys into playing the right way to get them to win. And you have to trick them sometimes. They think that they have an idea or a way of winning that makes the most sense to them, whatever their family's telling them, what they've done in the past. But it might not fit your specific team or what's best for the team to do right now. So you have to trick them into believing what we believe is the best way to do it. And sometimes you make them feel like they're doing it their way when in actuality, they're doing it the way you want them to do it.
Daryl, let me piggyback that. And I think sometimes as coaches, especially, I know when I was a younger coach, we don't do a great job of explaining why we're going to do something. We just tell the guys, the gals, this is what we're doing, go do it. And I think Daryl hit on such a good point of getting the players' buy-in, their feedback, their understanding of what we're trying to accomplish in this scheme or, with this offensive set, whatever it may be, is you know, maybe more important than, you know, telling him the stat numbers. It's really the coming down to, this is why we're doing it, and this is how it's going to help us win.
And Brett, I might be aging myself, but I think you have to tell this generation why you're doing everything. You have to. If they don't buy in or believe in, and they don't see the value to themselves individually, it's hard to get them to execute and play at a high level. They need to see why it makes sense for them and how it will make them look better. Maybe not even as much as it makes the team look better, if we're going to be completely honest about it.
That's an interesting point. I mean, a lot of coaching is psychology. I mean, in terms of how you communicate and how you got to meet the players at certain places to make sure they're receiving the message. In terms of scouting, I mean, obviously, when you hit the college ranks, staffs are bigger, you have more resources. I mean, you get your scouting reports, and we kind of know how that works. But a lot of coaches listening to this are grassroots coaches or coaches in high school, may not have the same resources and same opportunities. So Brett, I'll start with you. Are there ways in which you think it becomes more efficient to have success, to have your team prepared, but if it is just one assistant or the head coach trying to do the scouting, what would you recommend them to do to maximize their time to give the impact for their team?
You know, I think somewhat with the pace and the number of games and the frequency of them in the NBA is similar almost to having a smaller staff at times, because you're just constantly playing, constantly seeing a different opponent. So at the end of the day, we really focus on what are the 1, 2, 3 biggest rocks that we can move to give us a chance to win. You know, it might be, hey, tonight we're playing a team that's lightning fast and they score 30 points a game in transition. Relaying that to our team and understanding that if we don't get back in transition and we let them score 35, 40 points, we're probably going to lose that game. So really almost dumbing it down and making it as simplistic as possible and giving them kind of a tangible understanding of what this opponent's strengths really are and what we really need to do to impact that and on both sides of both offensively and defensively.
I'm sorry, guys. I'm still stuck on Daryl admitting that he tricks his players, and now I'm wondering if every advanced stat conversation I ever had was all lies.
It was.
But all jokes aside, I think, again, and as Dallin and I have these conversations, the theme of the relationship, which to me, the next level of that is the buy-in, right, of explaining why we do what we do. I know that we took a ton of pride in that. When the buy-in aligns with the stats, I guess that would obviously be the sweetest spot, Coach Duffy.
Absolutely. I think at the end of the game, when you can reference a couple stats that you've been working on all week and you see it all come to fruition, and the energy of the staff and the team is, hey, we earned this for what we did. And just to go off a little bit from the grassroots question, I think it can be overwhelming when you do have one or two people on staff trying to, you know, take all this knowledge and be like, how do we even have the manpower to do it? And, you know, I agree with just picking a couple key things that you can focus on the day-to-day. But one of the things that I've really enjoyed getting into from an analytics side is in the off season, creating a few more of those projects that take time and, you know, you can really dive into when you can't in the heart of a season or you don't have enough manpower. So that would be a little bit of my suggestion of, you can only do so much when you have limited staff, I think, in a lot of ways, and keep it simple. But if you can then, you know, pick a couple key topics to really dive into with some film work, or, you know, even as you're watching an NBA game right now and they mention some of those key stats, kind of bring it back to your own team and take that into your next team you're trying to build in the future years.
I actually want to stay there, Coach Duffy, because I know for us, I can remember the ongoing conversation about consuming basketball, not just our opponent scout, but watching ball. And even for you guys, like if your NBA players are watching the G League or vice versa, is it, because I know you mentioned your players are very visual. If they can see, does that help them see the stats? Does that help them come, does it help it come alive, even though it may not necessarily be their matchups?
I think for my end, absolutely. The more we try and reference, like you spend a lot of time in your own season watching your opponent yourself, but I love right now during this time to, you know, turn on a playoff game and, you know, pick certain players and even texting our team of like, hey, watch how Dame creates space, you know, to get a shot off in late game situations, or, you know, watch certain players the way they move to those money spots on the floor. Like we love that part about it. And, you know, the key to teaching it is throwing in a few analytics with it. And, you know, every time, you know, I see this, you know, see if you guys can figure that out as well. But whether it's WNBA games or NBA games right now, it's incredible to be able to reference to our women. And even when we're talking to young recruits, like we want them to see that vision of the highest level and you know, all that goes into it.
Coach Duffy, you have some really good players if you're telling your players to try to create separation like Dan Miller.
Man, what?
That dude is different, Coach. He's different. I don't want anybody watching what Dame Lillard does. You can't do what Dame Lillard does. You can't do what Steph Curry does. Let's find some more regular, average-looking players, and let's try to mimic what they're doing. You can't do what those guys do. They really train and work hard and do that every day.
So you're not tricking your guys into believing that part, Daryl, huh?
You're not Dame Lillard. I will tell you the exact truth. I will make eye-to-eye contact with you and tell you, you're not Dame Lillard. Don't try to do what Dame Lillard does, please.
Daryl, you guys weren't working on 35-footers at practice?
Step-back 35-footers, we were not working on that. They actually would try to do that in the pregame, and we would be like, no, we're not doing that. Please, let's try to get serious, guys. We're not taking play-around shots. We're trying to get game shots right now.
Okay, but Daryl, then what?
To Coach W's point, though, I want to just touch real quick on watching basketball, and I apologize for
my... No, that was the question, please.
So a lot of guys, I think our generation grew up watching basketball games for entertainment. We didn't have social media. We didn't have a lot of other distractions. If you were a true hooper, you worked out, you played, you played outside, you did whatever you want to do. And then when you got home, you watched basketball the entire night, especially when you were able to watch, you know, playoff games throughout the, like that was as good as it got. These guys now and these women now, they have a lot of other things to pull them in a lot of different directions. And I'd be interested to hear what Coach Duffy says from the college standpoint. I would talk to our guys about a game that happened last night. If I didn't directly talk to them when the game was going on, if I tried to talk to them about it the next day, it's a good chance they didn't see it. I don't think these kids watch basketball for entertainment anymore. And it's surprising because you would think that that's their goal. That's what they're trying to accomplish. You know, they want to watch the best players and try to mimic them. They rather watch highlights on YouTube or clips on Instagram or Twitter as they're scrolling through trying to get their own personal narcissism going, and they'll catch some basketball on there versus actually watching the game, listening to the commentators, seeing different strategies come about, and then having a discussion with their coaches or their peers about why different people did different things, which is, you know, in my opinion, how you really learn and how you grow your IQ.
Yeah, Coach Duffy, what are you seeing at the college level there?
I agree with some of that. I think our generation, I think, is more quick information, highlights. But I know our team does a really good job just from a social side of things of getting together and, you know, watching games, especially now. So I think there's a mix with the balance of watching full games and really trying to study it versus did they just see the highlight on Twitter or Instagram like that. But I think, you know, part of our job as educators is to get them to not just look at the highlights, you know, look at the flow and the package of what makes these men and women successful. And they want the quick, no doubt, they want the quick, you know, highlights and Sports Center world and all that. But I think our guys do a pretty good job of doing both.
Coach Duffy won't say it, but I will. Shout out to women's basketball players that typically learn a little differently, put a little more into it in that regard. Mm-hmm.
And just to, I think one thing that's getting lost too, kind of as our younger, you know, our youth, is just the history of the game. And, you know, we're getting some of these young kids as well. Kind of, you know, Coach Duffy, you see it, you know, these 18-year-old kids. And, you know, I asked a point guard that came through our organization. He'd never seen Steve Nash before play. And you're talking about one of the greatest of all time. Like, you know, they've never seen the TNT crew of Charles Barkley and Shaq. They've never seen them play. So I think another great way to engage them is to, you know, use the YouTube clips, use your resources to help give them kind of a history of who some of these greatest players are as you teach and steal some of their, you know, kind of magic. But I just feel like we've lost some of the history of our game.
That's a great point. And a good reference too for folks. I mean, you utilize the fact that we have all these multimedia assets to try to help teach the game and teach the history of the game. Cause you're right. It does blow my mind how many young people have not seen some of the greatest players ever play the game. On that note, Daryl, you mentioned something earlier though, talking about if you have the talent advantage, you know, you should go out and do what you do. But if you don't have the talent advantage, you're trying to show your team what this team is about. How do you manage? Let me give you the example. We played Washington at Washington when Nate Robinson was there, Brandon Roy, Trey Simmons, the year before they were the number one seed. But we saw clips like these guys would lose to, you know, 10-year-olds. Like we went in there thinking we were going to rock these guys. I've never been blown out in my life like that. Like it was never competitive from the tip. But I think we mentally didn't understand how good they were. It's almost the coaches didn't want to scare us and show us real deal. So how do you, if you have an inferior team and you have a high school or grassroots group or even a college coach listening, what would you show your team? What are you trying to show your team when you know there's a talent gap, but you want them to believe they can win, but they still have to be fully aware of what we're dealing with here?
You made some terrific points, and that's a fine line of showing them highlights that are scary and intimidating versus showing them their deficiencies or when they play poorly and giving your guys too much confidence. It's a fine line, and it's tough, and I think you have to have a good feel for your team individually on you know, how serious they prepare regardless of the opponent, which obviously some of that is learning and different experiences that you go through versus do you have, you know, senior-laden guys or do you have really young guys that are immature? It's kind of, you know, what their approach is to the game is kind of dictate how you give them the information. I probably am a little bit more close to the line of scaring them than I am making them feel overconfident, because I just feel like if they're overconfident, what you said can happen. And I've seen it happen before where you just go in and you're relaxed. I rather them be scared and nervous and playing extremely hard from the tip and maybe making a couple mistakes early, but their intensity and their lock and their focus is there. And hopefully, you know, they'll get a little less nervous as the adrenaline starts, you know, stops pumping and they get more serious into the nuts and bolts of the game versus coming out a little lackluster and loose and the other team is just better and they're just rolling. And once they start rolling, I mean, we've all sat there on the bench. When you're sitting there on the bench and you're down 20, you're down 30, it's a helpless, helpless, sad feeling. And I mean, the clock is just going so slow. You're looking around.
Well, Daryl, it's worse when Nate Robinson's blowing by you and you have 25 minutes to play. That's a little worse.
I played at Duke against Jason Williams.
There you go.
Corey Maggette, Trajan Lane, and Elton Brand. Believe me, I've been in the exact situation you're talking about. And when you're younger, it hurts. But when you're a coach and you're sitting there, it's worse, man. It's brutal. It's brutal sitting there watching it as a coach.
Yeah.
I think a great line for that, I've heard it within a couple organizations, and to me it reflects kind of what Daryl said, is appropriate fear. Having an idea of if we don't do what we come to do, if we don't execute, play hard, we're going to get our butts kicked. And, you know, that I've always embraced that and heard it along my way of appropriate fear, even if you're the best team in the league or the underdog.
Coach Duff, anything you want to add on that topic before we move on?
I mean, there's been games where I needed about 10 timeouts in the first quarter and couldn't use all of them. So I know the feeling that Daryl's talking about. Connecticut just came into our league, and so I had a couple moments like that this season. But yeah, we find that balance of we've had plenty of film sessions where we show players missing shots, and you know, to kind of ease the tension a little bit with opponents, you know, like a UConn or that obviously can make a whole lot of shots, but a little bit of you got to add sometimes a little humor with it, you know, of, you know, you set the tone with what it will take to guard these guys and all that, but then you gotta loosen them up a little bit in some different ways to, you know, show a shot that, you know, hey, everybody airballs a shot every once in a while, or, you know, just to keep your team loose especially with the games that are obviously high pressure games and, you know, you're playing for a championship where there's a lot riding on it.
Great stuff. Those appropriate fear is an interesting term too. I like that too, Brett. That was, and of course, including some humor is always good. I have those memories too in the locker room where you get a good laugh and it, you know, kind of maybe makes the room relax a little bit.
On that note real quick, Coach Duffy, because UConn was in the league when we were in the league. And I remember my freshman year, we were down 32 at halftime. And after the game, our teammate was like, well, technically we outscored them in the second half. Like, what? No.
Hey, she's really positive. There you go. Whoever that is a positive outlook on life. Okay. Well, most of the stuff we talk about is obviously as a scouting is preparation and maybe some in-game management. There's an e-coach resource, folks. If you want to get videos, tons of NBA coaches have broken down different parts of the game, X's and O's of the game, how to build team chemistry. We'll do it with Jim O'Brien coming up in an episode. But this piece of the e-coach is Kenny Atkinson working on an actual on-court drill, working on the runner. We'll show you that, and coming out, we'll talk about it.
Hi, this is Kenny Atkinson with the NBA Coaches and e-coach. The next finishing move we will be working on is a 1-foot runner. The situation we use to runner it is often off a pick and roll. So as Trevor comes to set a pick and roll for me, I'm gonna drive the ball middle off his pick. As he rolls to the rim, I'm gonna pull up for a 1 foot runner. The runner is different from the floater. The floater is a hand on top shot. The runner is just like your jump shot. We get our hand under the ball, we get our guide hand on the ball, and we shoot it right off, just like our shot, off our left foot. So one more time, we speed it up a little. Pick and roll, I come off, roll the defender's back, boom, shoot it right off my guide hand, just like my shot, my catch and shoot shot. The only difference is I'm going off 1 foot, my left foot in this case, to the finish, okay? Let's go with the 1 foot runner, guys, off the pick and roll. Good, that's great, Sean. Good, defense is back. Good. Defending the pick and roll. Good, shoot it just like your jump shot. Off your left foot, Sean. Excellent. Good job sticking it too. Again, you don't want too much forward motion. Good, right up to your shot. That's really good. Let's go to the right side, Sean. So just like our floater, we should be able to use both feet when we finish. So this time on our runner, we're gonna go off our right foot. So as I come off the pick and roll, Trevor's rolling, I'm gonna stick my right foot in the ground, gather, and again, shoot my runner. Pick and roll, come off, boom, put my right foot, and shoot the ball. The great thing about being able to use both feet is that the defender never knows when you're gonna shoot. And you're always ready to shoot the ball in any scenario because you can use both feet. Here we go, Trevor, good. Off your right foot, Sean, that's great. Just like your shot. Put your hand under the ball, excellent. Off your right foot, Cam, good. As many of you know, this is a shot that was projected by Steve Nash during his MVP years. Again, great strategy against a pick and roll. Defender's back, we can go off either foot. That's great, good work, guys. The 1 foot runner is another great tool to put in your finishing arsenal.
Great stuff there from Coach Atkinson. I know in the chat, we were kind of joking about Trae Young, you know, mastering this skill. Thanks to Coach Atkinson for breaking it down. Brett, anything you want to add to what Coach had said?
Yeah, Coach Atkinson, one of the best teachers of our game. We were just talking about our chat. Like today's Trae Young is probably the best in the league at this. He is an absolute master. And I think just, one or two things that Kenny didn't really hit on all that much was just how great it is versus kind of this new era of drop defense. And that's where the big is kind of back, retreating towards the rim, really enticing the ball handler to kind of shoot those mid-range shots. And if you can master this, it's incredibly effective. And we've seen it often that big will start to creep up and now open himself up to being able to hit the roll, or throw that thing up for lobs. And then I thought the other beautiful thing about that is the ability to change pace, getting into that shot. And we're always talking about how to keep a defense off balance, and change of pace is such an incredible way, especially if you got that kind of defender on your back, you're able to stop, create separation after you go again. And it also disrupts that timing of that big. These shot blockers at the rim, you'll often see, especially with these elite ones, the Rudy Goberts, the Anthony Davises, if they can time you coming off a pick and roll, like you saw right there with Coach Atkinson, that thing's gonna be a tough shot. But being able to change pace is so very important. And just bringing it back to our teaching, our history part of it, Steve Nash, arguably the best at this. And as his career kind of grew, he was able to start manipulating, stopping, leaning back as a shorter player, getting that thing up over guys. So you can really have multiple levels of teaching working on that shot.
Just to piggyback on that real quick, Brett. So I think what also makes Trae Young elite at this, I think he's the best in the league at coming off the ball screen, stopping at the point of the screen, and having you, as you're trying to fight over top, run into him as he throws it up and gets free throws. Mm-hmm. So what it does is it takes away your aggressiveness defending him. So now you're coming off of and you're worried about him stopping. So he doesn't even necessarily hold you on his hip like a Luka Doncic or a bigger guard. He either stops at the screen or he kind of snakes it and curls around it. And then once he gets in that middle area where it's 8 to 13 feet, he's unbelievable. But it's because he can take away your aggressiveness of how hard you chase him over top. It's a hard skill. I personally, as a basketball purist, get frustrated with it because I don't really think it's a foul. But I understand the thought process behind it, and I think it's mm-hmm. what's made him deadly at it. And I think that's a skill and almost something that should be worked on in individual instruction. It's something that, you know, guys should be learning because it's really what takes his floater game and his ball screen game to the next level.
Coach Duffy, how much are you guys working on things like this at the college level in terms of runners and like we're talking about using your body to draw fouls and things like that? You see the elite guys in the league do.
Well, Coach, before you answer, I've seen Selena do this in spots. Your alum, Natisha Heideman, definitely has it in her game. So I know it's in there.
Absolutely. I mean, I made a killing at Notre Dame doing it with my size and, you know, lack of athleticism. But I think both guys, coaches hit it on the head with just the change of speed and keeping guys off balance. And it's putting a lot of pressure on that post defender. And, you know, at our level, you don't need every kid to be doing it. It takes a certain mm-hmm. skill set. And, you know, what I don't think young players understand, if you want to be great at, you know, going off one foot and shooting those floaters or runners, whatever your terminology is, the amount of reps that you have to put in, you know, with different situations with, you know, somebody on the side of you as your defender, where the help side's coming from that post player. Is it, you know, in our game, is it 6'4" coming at you versus 6'2"? So the amount of reps, I think that I know I try and stress, if you're going to be good at it, just like anything else, you can't just do it, you know, for 5 or 10 minutes. It's an all the time type of skill you got to work on.
It's a great piece to end on. Thank you, Coach Duffy, Brett, Daryl. Thank you guys so much for joining us. We appreciate your insights. It was outstanding.
Thank you. You guys also get the gold star for our most energetic group yet. Shout out to y'all.
She just diamond out the other 9 groups. All right, that's
my shout out to y'all. I'm tricking y'all.
Thank you guys. Have a good one.
We want to thank our friends at the NBA Coaches Association and eCoach for providing instructional content from their eCoach video library to give our listeners an insider's perspective on how NBA coaches teach the game. For more information and to access the library of more than 400 videos, go to eCoachBasketball.com.
Thanks for listening. Make sure to join Monica and Dallin each week on the Junior NBA Coaches Corner. For more, go to juniornba.com or wherever your favorite podcasts are found.